Welcome to Healing the World Through Music podcast. I'm Sherry Gross, bringing you conversations, experiences, and explorations on healing music and music for healing. You can find information on healing music events, tours, and trainings, as well as free gifts, music downloads, and all kinds of resources on music for healing at www.healingtheworldthroughmusic.com. Find yourself in a comfy spot and settle in because it's going to be an amazing episode. Thanks for listening. Today's guest is Lisa Sangeeta Moscow. She prefers to be known as Sangeeta, and her instrument of choice is the sarod. The sarod is a multi-stringed lute from North India, and this has been the centerpiece of Sangeeta's musical journey. Her rigorous formal studies occurred between 1969 and 1985 with classical North Indian maestro Ali Akbar Khan. Sangeeta's musical career reflects a personal global consciousness and delight in the wonderful variety of artistic expression we have available to us in today's multicultural world. The spiritual nature of classical North Indian music forms a foundation for Sangeeta's songs, which cover themes of nature, mythic characters from many cultures, and stories from her travels. Her work in New Thought churches has given rise to more specifically spiritual themes. Sangeeta has received more than 10 awards for musical composition from the ASCAP Foundation. She was the recipient of a Subito grant from the American Composers Forum. Sangeeta's musical collaboration with Swiss clarinetist Hermann Buhler inspired many compositions, some featured on their Sojourn CD. Sojourn toured Europe for more than a decade and also received Swiss support for a 17-concert tour in Mexico. Sangeeta began her studies on the tabla, and she talks about that. She studied from Phil Ford, Shankar Ghosh, and Zakir Hussain. The Planet Tree Music Festival producer, pianist, composer, Londoner Lawrence Ball, and Sangeeta perform totally improvised music based on Indian raga skills. Sangeeta talks a little bit about ragas in this interview. Their last performance occurred at the Planet Tree Music Festival at Pete Townsend's studio on the outskirts of London. With that amazing introduction, I'd like to welcome Lisa Sangeeta Moscow. Lisa Sangeeta Moscow, welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
And my consciousness was just a fabulous set. Very powerful. And that night I had dreams that I was in the hospital, and Ali Akbar Khan came in and said that, he said, this music will heal you. And it was a very powerful dream. I mean, it just was, you know, one of those things just. So I started studying after that. I thought, okay, not even really thinking, like, do I need to be healed even? You know, we don't know. We're not always conscious of who we are. I wasn't enough to think, oh, yeah, I need to be healed, right?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I know. I never thought I needed healing either. And I realized after doing so much yoga and just how much I loved all of this healing exercises and process that I'm like a junkie now. I can't get enough.
Well, yes, all of a sudden you look back and said, you see how things are better. Then you look back and say, yeah, I did need that because things are better, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think I was always a musician, more than a visual artist. I grew up in a family, my mother didn't like music. Like, can you imagine growing up in a place where...
Oh, no.
And so I was envious of all my friends who who had piano lessons, because they hated their piano lessons, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I would have loved to just had just instruments to play on, and, you know, the first thing I ever bought was a radio. I listened to Motown, like, all the time.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, well, that's actually healing music, too, in a certain way. You know, it's very trance-inducing.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you, Sangeeta.
Okay.
You prefer to be called Sangeeta, is that right?
Yeah.
Yes?
Yeah.
Which means music or song in Hindi, is that right?
It means music in Sanskrit.
In Sanskrit?
But as opposed to nada, which is the word for sound, Gita is the actual literature. Song is like from sangha, so it's like you're playing music with the literature, the actual. In this case, what we might say would be the mantras, you know, the old stuff.
Yeah. Well, how did you first come to realize that your music has healing effects?
Well, I was a visual artist at UC Berkeley in the 60s, and I always listened to music when I painted, and I got to a point where I only listened to classical North Indian music because that music was what I wanted my painting to look like. I wanted to express the same thing in visual that I got from that music. So I was sort of being healed by listening to that music and attracted to it because of this healing effect.
Those traditional classical Indian pieces are so, they're like tranquilizing and really, it puts me in a state of mind. I could see how you would want to listen to that while you're painting, because it's the kind of music that I like to put on too, where I feel like I can have that in the background and it puts me at a higher state of being somehow. Like it lifts me and I can still concentrate on what I'm doing, but I feel inspired by it. And it's just, it really, it's a great, I can't explain it, but it's a really powerful effect.
Stream of consciousness. It seems to stimulate more subconscious area of our brain, which actually is the most powerful part of our brain. They're now showing in science. The logic part of our brain is just a tiny bit inside of this whole area that they would call emotional or intuitive. So I think I felt a lack of that energy in our culture, so I was very attracted to actually, I've always been a really good daydreamer. I got in trouble at school for it. I got checks on my report card for not paying attention, but I just wasn't paying attention to the teacher, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I was paying attention to my own floating sort of mentality, which, you know, that is.
Yeah, so was that then, did the painting come first for you and you were listening to the Indian classical music and you started to play the Indian classical music, or how did that?
I was painting before I started doing the music. I basically was more, I actually really liked music more than visual art, but at UC Berkeley, the music department was really uptight. I mean, really, really uptight and not at all attractive, whereas the art department, you just have, like, hours to paint, and your teacher would just sort of wander around and play in the comment once in a while. You'd probably just sort of walk around and watch people. It was a doing class. We would just be, and I was a painter, so I would just go to class and just paint. So I liked that, the process of that. I did a lot of visual art because I didn't do music because my mother didn't like music.
Wow.
And so I listened to the radio. That was the first thing I ever bought with my allowance was a radio. I did not come from a family that respected music, let's put it that way.
Interesting.
Yeah, especially since all my friends, you know, had pianos and piano lessons, and they hated it. And here, I would have given anything to have a piano, right?
Yeah. Well, how did you start to play the music then?
I was never serious about music until I started to play Indian music, because there was something about that quality we were just talking about that I felt made my life better, or something that I didn't have in my life. Mm-hmm. I was in a very busy culture, you know, with lots of activities and things happening. I did feel like there was a kind of inner satisfaction that music fed. It nourished, you know. This was sort of meditation, which is starting to be something that people talked about in those days. Where I graduated in 1968. So you could see I coming from a long time ago.
Well, you were right there in Berkeley. Isn't that where everything was coming up, all the movement with the meditation and the...
Everything was happening. It was wonderful. I was in heaven because I grew up in suburbia in San Mateo, California, which was kind of rigid 50s, everything sort of in its little compartment. And I always could never understand things like war and violence and why don't we live in peace. And all of a sudden, living in Berkeley is like, I mean, I really believe that we'd be living in world peace by now. I mean, that's how innocent we were in those days. But I really believed that. And that was a wonderful thing to believe. All of a sudden, the world started to look like what I thought it should look like, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hope, people getting along with each other and loving each other and collaborating in nice ways. But also at the same time, I was living right near People's Park. There were curfews and police surrounding my neighborhood. I saw people get beat up. You know, I mean, there was this political stuff happening all around, too.
Well, I've been to a concert at the People's Park. That's interesting. So that's the same People's Park that had events back in the heyday in the 60s.
That was the cause of a lot of protests, actually, along with Vietnam War. And they also had National Guard there with guns. And you've probably seen the picture of the hippie girl putting a flower in the barrel of one of those guys' guns.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, that was what was happening. There was this, all of a sudden, this movement that was wonderful to be experiencing.
Yeah. You got to actually study with one of the most famous classical Indian musicians and teachers around. So can you tell us about that experience, how it came about, and how you're able to get under his tutelage?
The first time I heard him was when I was a student, and I actually fell in love first with the tabla, the drums. I thought, well, this would be a real fun thing to do. It's sort of sideline to my art, and I went to study with somebody, a student of the guy who taught with Ali Akbar Khan, and actually he played with a wonderful tabla player who left before I started studying. Then my husband and I moved to Oregon because my husband became an instrument maker, and he, while we were there, he had me bring one of the sarodes that he made. He told me to bring it to the class to show Ali Akbar Khan because he wanted to sell them. So I brought that instrument to class, and Ali Akbar Khan taught this just absolutely gorgeous piece of music that was so heart-opening and so mind-blowing that I just kind of got converted immediately. You know? So I became a sarod player as well as a tabla player.
Ali Akbar Khan, he was actually your teacher.
Yeah, he was my teacher for 18 years, actually.
Wow.
The reason why I studied so long was that his method of teaching was just wonderful. It was very participatory, mostly for the instrumental class. He would compose on the spot, and then he would have one guy who was on one side of the class play back what he composed, because he would be changing it. He'd go through a cycle of maybe 16 or 32 beats, and he'd hear him play, then he'd hear the guy on the other side of the room, and then he would choose which one we would notate and play back when we came back to show him that we learned it for the next class. It was just very participatory. It was like it was happening in the moment. It wasn't like a fixed piece of music that's being stamped onto our consciousness. Sometimes the way it was played would be the reason why that version would be kept.
Hmm.
We would all get the same version, so when we came back to the next class, we would play it back. If we played it back and Ali Akbar Khan liked it, then he would be happy and he would be inspired and we'd get more stuff. If he didn't like it, he would punish us by, he would say, like, we sounded like Burger King. And, you know, or something like that, you know, like burnt toast and cold coffee. So he'd make some sarcastic remark, and then he would give us something that would sound like, like really terrible, right? You know, not at all soulful. We learned to not chomp through something like carelessly. You know, things had to be nuanced. This was magic for me, and that's why I studied so long, because that situation was very magic.
Yeah. Well, I know the Ali Akbar Khan School of Music continues on today. I mean, it's legendary for anybody.
You sort of designated Alam Khan, his oldest son by Mary Khan, to be the kind of inheritor of the tradition. And his wife, Khansab has passed, but his wife, Mary, runs in Alam, and the tabla instructor, it runs the school now. It's a shadow of its former self, unfortunately. It's there, and people study there, and if they have, you know, it's amazing that, that something like that would last so long.
Yeah.
It was the late 60s when it started.
Tell us about the actual instruments. So which instruments did Ali Akbar Khan specialize in playing? And then can you describe, you I know have played the tabla, and tell us a little bit about the tabla and the sarod, because I think that a lot of our listeners may not even know about the sarod, what that is, and could you explain?
Most people know about sitar, and sarod is a, if the sitar is a guitar, then the sarod would be more like a banjo. It has a skin face, 25 strings. It's pretty much set up like a sitar, but it has a metal plate, so you slide your finger along the plate so you get in between the tones. The sitar has these big, huge frets. It's smaller. It's a little more bright sounding, so it's not. You hear sitar, and you immediately hear this is Indian. Sarod, I play situations where people ask me if it's Middle Eastern or Chinese. They don't know, you know, because it's not quite as obviously Indian. It has resonating strings. Of the 25, 15 are just there for resonating. So you play that note and the resonating string responds sympathetically.
Hmm.
It has four playing strings, two what they call chikari, which is like a banjo fifth, that are rhythm on the very top of the instrument. And there's four strings that they call jawari, which you tune to the main notes of the raga you're playing. Normally, one raga is played 45 minutes, or it could be played 5 hours. You know, it could be, it's one long piece that starts very slow and then moves through all kinds of sections and themes, and then ends very, very fast and very intense.
Hmm.
So it's sort of experience. One of my attractions to Indian music was the fact of being carried through something for a really long time instead of that brief little tune that you get in Western music. This was like a whole process. So you really get inside the music when you're sitting there, you know, for that long.
Mm-hmm.
And you're also moving along from very, very slow to very, very fast. You know, usual process.
And like you said earlier, there's something subconscious about that, I think, because it's almost like when I listen to that type of music or I put on a raga, which I put on, this is very subconscious, Lisa, Sangeeta, because as I contacted you about the interviews, I had been putting on the raga music, the morning ragas, and it was very subconscious. Because I didn't realize and connect that the ragas you are playing were related to the ragas that I was listening to just to email to you. And then it just clicked in my conscious mind. Oh my goodness, like I put on the ragas this morning and then I'm calling Lisa. And it was all happening on this subconscious level. It's so amazing, but it's a very subtle, it's not a distracting type of a music, even though there could be a lot happening in the subconscious mind. I always feel relaxed and able to be creative when I listen to it.
Oh, yeah. It's very good for just hanging out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it also, if you really listen carefully, then, of course, you can listen on many different levels. I think that the vibration is, there's something that happens with the vibration with our, since our cells vibrate also, and of course ragas, they do have meanings. They're based on one or two emotions. Usually one that's called veer, which is like war, but there's peace and there's romantic love and all kinds of emotions that the raga expresses, and also seasons, you know, like the rainy season and spring. So this meaning besides is to get the babies to fall asleep in the hot of the day in India when you want, for people, it's too hot to work. So people nap and they want their babies to go to sleep. So they all these ragas in the middle of that time are very, very sleep-inducing.
Oh. So we could talk for hours, Sangeeta. I think I'm going to have you back on another call. But if we wanted to leave the listeners with a sample of your music, what's your favorite piece that you play that we could have people listen to?
Village. That song I really like a lot because it's really happy and it's really, it's very improvised and very happy and very upbeat.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Okay, yeah. Well, we're going to play that one.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much, Lisa Sangeeta Moscow. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
It's been very nice talking to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Till next time. Bye. Oh, isn't that amazing? Thank you so much for joining us today and listening to this episode of Healing the World Through Music. Do check our website for your free tools on healing music and music for healing, including your own healing music blueprint, which is a new exciting offering that you'll find at www.healingtheworldthroughmusic.com. Thank you. Thank you.